The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
Here we go, 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. Jim Dunaway, Lance Taylor, Ryan Brown, Rockstar, Stu and Laurel, everybody here. On a hump day, 834-9450, phone calls throughout. Also on Twitter at Jocks Roundtable. Later on at 7:05, you'll get Tom Luganville. He'll join us to talk college football, give us some insight from some camps on what he's seeing. Off the bat, though, I do want to talk a little baseball. Are we to the point now where you're going to be so offended when someone really questions whether or not you're 19 or not? What exactly did Joe Simpson say? Did it get offensive? I haven't heard the audio yet. I see the headlines. Wouldn't be the first time in baseball history we questioned somebody's age.
Joe Simpson's turned into a grumpy old man for some reason.
I knew you were watching this.
No, I don't know. No, actually, I wasn't. It happened in the first half of the doubleheader. I was playing golf, so I missed the first half.
Of the day game. That was a good game for you, Nationals fans.
It was, yes. I missed the good one. He came back and tried to clean it up in the night game because he was confronted by Nationals GM Mike Rizzo between games.
Which I think is ridiculous that Mike Rizzo would take his time to actually confront him.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're questioning the organization and a player about lying about his age.
Yeah, but I think it's more this guy at 19 is doing grown man things. There's no way this guy is 19. It's like when Greg Oden came out of Ohio State. There's no way this guy would have been a sophomore.
Yeah.
It was almost meant in a compliment kind of way if he's really 19.
It was. You cannot say anything. And I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. I mean, First Amendment's dead. Yeah. Absolutely dead.
Well, I mean, First Amendment only protects you from the government.
Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Well, Second Amendment's the guns.
Yeah. Yes, the Second Amendment's still alive.
It's still political season. You'll see some of the Second Amendment, too.
But you can't say anything. But we've got such a fragile society. Now Joe Simpson, because he was talking about how the Dodgers were dressed for batting practice, and now he talks about Juan Soto doesn't look 19. They're talking about he finds himself in the middle of controversy again.
Your point is that he is become the grumpy old get-off-my-lawn guy.
Well, he has. I mean, well, if he's really 19. Now, I didn't hear how he said it. I just read it. You know, but basically what he said, if he's really 19, he's a grown man 19.
I don't know if he's 19. I mean, is Juan Soto really 19?
19 years, 286 days.
So we've never had a Latino player actually lie about his age.
Well, there has
No, been, it has been.
There has been some issues over the years, and I think that's what got people offended. Is you don't say that about 19-year-old Bryce Harper when Bryce Harper was coming up. It's because he's a Latino player.
Well, I think the documentation is a little more, I don't know,
see, that's what
accurate.
And when people were saying, well, there were racial overtones to it because it was a Latino player, well, Latino players have a history of this. So I don't think there's racial overtone. That was a stupid overreaction to bring racism into it.
19 years, 286 days, and Soto is the youngest player to reach base five or more times in a game since Robin Yount. These are the kind of stats you got yesterday once Joe said that. You started to get Soto updates.
Yeah.
With his 14th home run, Juan Soto has passed Mickey Mantle for the fifth most by a teenager.
I like all good Soto updates.
Ridiculous. After the fact, you saw what Joe Simpson said, too. Go on and hand him the National League Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he went the...
He forgot that he's got some pretty good rookies on that Atlanta Braves roster.
He went the complete other way, didn't he?
So ridiculous.
He tried to overcompliment him.
But that's where we are in society.
Well, I thought... I wasn't offended by it, but...
Well, some people obviously were, including your general manager.
Well, you know, at that point, it's not cheating because there's no age limit you're questioning the integrity of the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with the National General Manager. I don't know that it got heated, Lance, or if he was offended, but I don't have a problem with coming up to him and saying, hey, look, I know you're questioning our guy. He is 19.
Well, I mean, Rizzo told The Athletic, quote, I handled it face-to-face privately with him.
Okay.
That's the way you do
That's the way you should do it, right?
I mean, I believe he understood my stance on his comments. I mean, obviously, Rizzo was upset about it. I just don't know why you would get upset about that. Guy's just, you know, he's doing a broadcast.
Were you upset about what he said about your Dodgers?
No.
But you would admit Joe Simpson has become grumpy old man.
Oh, he's Tim McCarver.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening.
2.0. Yeah.
Has he always been that way? I don't watch a lot of Braves games. Has he always been that way?
I don't know.
See, I was on the national broadcast.
What happened to that? I kept getting soccer. I thought it was supposed to be on ESPN.
Well, yes, but they blacked that out for the Braves. But I have to keep it on. I have to get the non-Braves broadcast. When the Braves are playing, I have to keep it on my multi-mix
and just get the audio and watch it on a small little square. So I'm watching seven
that
games at
complicated.
Once. But I really like the Nationals broadcast team. I hate to say anything positive about the Nationals.
I know it kills you. Bob Carpenter and FP Santangelo are really, really good.
I really like their broadcast
And the only time
team.
I ever see the Braves broadcast is when they're playing the Nationals because of that dumb major league rule that I have to watch the Braves broadcast.
Exactly.
But I didn't know that Joe Simpson had become so grumpy.
I tried to pull it up full screen, and it made me watch the Braves broadcast in my extra inning.
And if
first world problem.
I don't know if it's a first world problem.
Is this really – look, I think it is kind of being grumpy, pointing out what the Dodgers are wearing for batting practice.
Well, that's being real grumpy.
But just saying Juan Soto isn't 19, again, I agree with Dunaway. It was more of a compliment. I mean, there is no way this guy is 19 years old.
Braves lose the first one of the Bryce Harper home run, 8-3 Nationals win it. But boy, second game, you got a great pitching performance from two guys, including Max Scherzer, who gets a no decision after going seven innings and six strikes. And I feel like if you're the Braves and you're going against Max and he gives you that kind of effort, you're dancing with the devil to get out of there with a win. But Enciarte with a big hit in the ninth inning, Braves win it 3-1, and the Braves got great pitching, Newcomb in that bullpen in that second game, and it was just a start to a really good series, that doubleheader yesterday. And it there's meat on the bone. This means something in that race.
It means way more for the Nationals than the Braves. And the Nationals let one get away last night. When you got Scherzer going and you got a chance to sweep a doubleheader, you got to take advantage of that. And I'll tell you what's frustrating, man, is when you bring a guy in out of the bullpen and he stinks the way the Nationals did, and he's got to kind of fake an injury to give your bullpen time to get another guy loose. I hate watching that because then it gives the guy the excuse for sucking. Well, he was injured. No, he's just faking an injury to give your bullpen. Everybody, I mean, every team does that, right? Every single team in Major League Baseball does that.
Nope, just your Nationals.
No, every team does that. You fake an injury to get the bullpen ready.
Don't let Joe Simpson say
that. Joe will be having to apologize on it.
Is he really hurt?
Well, I don't think this guy's really hurt. They're just giving their bullpen time.
Hey, yesterday at UAB practice, as they were out there with their camp like everyone else, Nick Vogel, and we sent this out on Twitter. You can check it out this morning. Nick Vogel, Christina Chambers of Fox 6 shooting the video, nails a 60-yarder in practice. Man, I love long booming kicks. Did you used to on a Saturday or Sunday, you and your buddies go down to the local high school, wherever you could get a goalpost? Because when you were playing in your yard, you didn't have the goalpost, right? But occasionally you'd get to pick up games, maybe on the high school field or the youth field, when you'd have the goalpost, and then you'd go out and you'd try to boom some kicks.
Nobody could boom kicks. The only person I know that was a non-kicker that could do it was our boy C-Stew.
C-Stew could do it?
Yeah. He could boom kicks?
Was he Tom Dempsey straight on?
Was there a bet involved?
Yeah, were you there that night?
No, I've heard the story, legend story.
Yeah, no, so we're sitting on the couch one night. This is probably more than a decade ago, and somebody misses, and this is when we're wagering a little bit, somebody misses a chip shot. It might have even been an extra point, and he's probably, 24, 30 beers deep. And he said, I can make that kick right now. Yeah. And so it really inflates to this conversation. Cole Kublik was with us. We ended up going to local high school field, probably midnight.
Hermont?
A lot of money on the line. Might have been Hermont. It might have been Oak Mountains Field.
Yeah, but that is Oak Mountains Field, Hermont. Well, the one at the school, too, has a goalpost.
C-Stew gets out there at midnight and first kick, 35-yard through the upright.
He nailed it. First kick.
He hit a 35-yarder?
No warm-ups.
First kick.
What
ask Kublik about it. Crazy.
If your life depended on making a field goal, what length would you be comfortable with before handing it off to somebody else?
Oh, not even a 10-yarder. Yeah, your life's
on the line.
That's in the end zone.
Yeah, I know, from the goal line.
Let me tell you, I don't know which NFL kicker I would pick.
Life. Yeah. Justin Tucker, there's no doubt. I feel good about it.
He's not invested like you are.
Inside of 50, I probably would go a couple $100 to my life if Tucker's kicking.
Oh, you want something back. Yeah. I'll put my life off. Yeah. But I'm going to also want something back. Give me a couple hundred on the other side.
Greg Zuerlein, not so much for my Rams, as good as he's been.
So if you say 45 yards.
For my life, I'm picking somebody else.
For your life, who do you pick?
I'm picking Tucker's the guy? He's probably right. It's Justin Tucker. I mean, all time, I might go Vinatieri or somebody like that, but Justin Tucker right now is the guy.
I mean, if something's on the line, Vinatieri is pretty good.
We had Cody Parkey last year for the Dolphins. For some reason, we let him go. He was dang good.
So were you guys in the mud puddle out there banging through 35, 40 yarders?
We'd go try it, and I never could do the soccer style.
Everybody was straight on back then.
Yeah, I could never do the soccer style with any distance at all. But I think at one point I got up to where the 20-yard line, 25-yard line, so a 35-yard kick.
I think Del Greco told me once you kick with the top of your foot. Like, I think most people try to kick with their toe, don't they?
That's a toe ball.
With the inside, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, there is an art to this.
There is.
You know, I went to one of these fan fairs. It was when the Rams played the Titans in the Super Bowl, and I hadn't kicked a ball in, you know, 10, 15 years. And when I went to kick it, it felt like I was electrocuted. Like, I hit the ball wrong, you know?
That's a toe ball.
It's a toe ball. Yeah. It goes right up through your leg.
Yeah, especially because it's like that.
Like taking BP in early February, and you get it on the handle.
Those were always fun days to go down there on the field. And you always felt like you were cheating being out on the high school field playing your pickup game.
Because it seems so big, doesn't it?
It does.
You've been playing in the backyard. Now you got that big old field out there.
Yeah, and we're going to play 100 yards. And the first time someone breaks it and goes 80 yards. I know. We'll see if he can do that while we discuss the Pac-12. We're going to break down the Power 5 conferences one every day until I go on vacation, basically, is the way this worked out. And we start with the Pac-12 today. And what I wanted to do was I want your official picks, and we'd love to see yours at home too, or when you get to work and you're safely in a place you can tweet or text us or email us your picks for each of these conferences as well. And we're going to do the Pac-12 today. And my initial comment to you, Lance and Ryan, was they're going to lose a lot of out-of-conference games this year in the Pac-12. I think there are a lot of out-of-conference losses for this league this year.
I don't think it's as bad as you think. I think there are five teams that are borderline double-digit win teams this year in the Pac-12. I think there are two legitimate national championship contenders, and I think actually the Pac-12 will come back up a little bit this year. I think there's going to be some bad teams at the bottom,
yeah,
but I think there's some really good teams at the top.
Well, that's where those losses come, LT. I've got three double-digit win teams and two at nine, and then after that I have a lot of bad.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
A lot of bad. So let's start in the South, which is perceived to be the weaker of the two leagues. With all due respect to my buddy Herm, who I hope I have this wrong, I have him winning one conference game and going 3-9 this year. Anybody have Herm better or worse than 3-9?
I had him worse. I had him at 2-8. I think he can beat Texas San Antonio, and I gave him the Oregon State win because I think they'll be just as bad, but I don't see him winning any other games.
Yeah, I agree with Brown. I think those are the two wins on this schedule for Arizona State. Look, eight returning starters on offense. Manny Wilkins is a guy I've been watching the last couple of years. Told you guys Blake Barnett wouldn't see the field because of Wilkins. I think the offense won't be bad with the eight returning starters. I think the defense is going to be a complete train wreck. And again, with the Pac-12 getting a little bit better, it's going to be a really rough year one for Herm Edwards. But I agree with Brown. I think 2-10 is the number.
I have them upsetting San Diego State on the road.
That'd be an upset.
That would be their big win. Other than that, we agree there. Colorado's my other team.
Yeah, 4-8.
At the bottom. How are you guys on Colorado?
4-8, 2-7 in conference.
I'm 6-6, actually.
Ooh.
I mean, we're only a couple of years removed from a Colorado team that went 10-4, and I understand Jim Leavitt was in charge of that defense, and there were some, you know, things that broke the right way.
You like them in the opener against Colorado State?
I do like them in the opener against Colorado State.
Yeah, I picked them in that.
I knew that was a swing game. I had them at a loss in that one. But I did have them 4-8 is all I have them. New Hampshire, Arizona State, Oregon State, and Washington State were my wins.
You know, I've got them beating UCLA on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. I think they lose. Actually, I've got them losing that game, but I've got them 6-6 overall. I mean, there are winnable games when you look at Arizona State rolling in. Washington State is going to be really down, in my opinion. But I've got them 6-6.
You bring up UCLA. Now, the Bruins with Chip Kelly, an interesting story. And when I looked at this last night, Brown, I thought to myself, all right, let's see what Chip does the first year. And when I was done, I never thought I'd say this, but could Chip Kelly coach a 4-8 team this year?
Well, I had him at 6-6, 4-5 in conference, but yeah, it could easily be 4-8. I mean, they're going to lose to Oklahoma in the non-conference. I had them beating Cincinnati and Fresno. I think you got them losing to Fresno.
I have them losing to Fresno State.
There's a path to 4-8. Yes.
Yeah, Fresno's a difficult game. I gave them that win because it is in the Rose Bowl. I've got them 5-7. I think they lose to Oklahoma, Washington, Cal, Utah, Oregon, USC, and Stanford.
4-8 for me. Their only win, Cincinnati at Colorado, at California, and Arizona State. And that California is not an easy one. So Chip Kelly could coach a non-bowl team.
Easily.
Is what we're
saying. Easily, yes.
Now I get to the bowl teams out there. The rest of your South Division bowl teams?
Yes. Well, Colorado was for me, too.
Okay, didn't make it for me. Arizona is 9-3, but 6-3 in the league. USC 8-4, 7-2 in the league. But Utah wins the division 7-2 and 10-2.
Okay, so we got a lot of differences.
Okay, because, tell me what your difference is.
All right, so real quick, I ended up with Utah at 6-6, and I kind of like this Utah team, but boy, when I started picking games, I had them at 6-6.
You have Utah at 6-6?
I have Utah at 6-6.
I agree with Dunaway. As bad as I hate to say this with USC, I think it's going to take a little bit for JT Daniels to get this thing going. I think USC's a 9-3 team. I think Utah's 10-2, and I think it comes down to that game, which, by the way, is homecoming in Salt Lake City, October 20th. I think USC loses to Utah. I think they're 9-3. I think Utah ends up 10-2. Their only losses to me, Washington and at Stanford.
I had USC at 11-1, 9-0 in conference.
Hope you're right.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Arizona was Utah and Arizona were two teams when I got finished with this. I was like, boy, I don't know if I've got these records right. I had Arizona at 10-2, 7-2 in conference.
I got Arizona 8-4. I think USC's losses at Stanford, at Texas, back-to-back weeks, and I think they lose at Utah.
So Arizona 9-3 for me, 6-3 in the league, which I think is a fantastic year. But USC I have losing at Stanford, at Texas, at Utah, and the final game of the year to Notre Dame, our preview team a little bit later on today. So four losses for USC for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, but again, I think they'll get that Notre Dame game. Clay Helton is yet to lose in the Coliseum. They're 16-0 under him. So I think they sweep the board at home, but I think their losses are all three losses on the road, Stanford, Texas, Utah.
Okay, to the north, we'll just push aside the non-bowl teams for me. That is Washington State and Oregon State.
Yeah, I got Washington State at 4-8. I got Oregon State at 2-10.
Yeah, I had Washington State at 7-5. I've got them in a bowl game. I had Cal at 5-7, missing a bowl.
No, I get Cal in at 6-6. Washington State 3-9, bad year at Washington State for me. 2-10 for Oregon State.
I think Cal's going to be improved. I mean, I think they're going to be 7-5, 18 returning starters. Justin Wilcox blew me away last year.
I love him coaching.
Yeah, I didn't like the hire.
Cal was the toughest one for me to project as you were projecting how everything would come out in the league. When it would come down to Cal playing somebody, I was like, man, that's a 50-50 game. And I ended up splitting them, basically, 6-6.
Well, they do have some big 50-50 games. You know, it starts with North Carolina and BYU out of conference, but I think they get both of those games, and I think they go 7-5.
Yeah, I got them at 6-6. But at the top, you have Oregon, Stanford, and Washington. How do those shake out in the standings for you first, Brent?
Well, I gave Washington's only loss to Auburn, and I think they run the table from there. They're 9-0 in conference, 11-1 overall.
I agree with you.
Next, I've got Stanford. Their only loss in conference is Washington. I also had them losing at Notre Dame, so I've got them at 10-2.
Dead on.
And then Oregon, I've got at 6-3, 9-3 overall. I have Oregon losing at home to Stanford, at home to Washington, and on the road in Arizona. Again, I think I might have overvalued Arizona a bit in this practice, but that's what I've done.
Oregon, I've got it 9-3. I think they lose to Washington. I think they lose at Utah. I think they lose at Arizona, but I think they actually beat Stanford. I think that Stanford's only loss, though, is at Oregon. I think Stanford goes 11-1, and I think Washington's only loss is at home to Stanford, which ultimately cost them the division. I think Washington and Stanford are both 11-1. I think Washington beats Auburn.
See, I don't like Stanford against Notre Dame, but I have Washington beating Utah in a really good Pac-12 championship game. What about you?
I have got Stanford beating Utah in a decent Pac-12 championship
game. I got UW over USC in a good, more moderately good Pac-12 championship.
That's our Pac-12 preview. What we'll do is package that up for you and send it out on our social media platforms a little bit later on today. And that's our on-the-record picks for the Pac-12. People ask us throughout the course of counting down to football, how do you think this league will play out? Well, these are our official picks, and we'll do another league tomorrow, the SEC coming up on Monday. A diet that anybody would love to be on from the National Football League. We watched Hard Knocks last night. I did. I watched every second of it.
I heard it was good. I didn't see it.
It was not bad. It was not bad. Jarvis Landry.
They played that up. Was that big?
Just wins me over.
Okay.
You know, I thought he was, book by cover. I thought he was a me, not a we guy with the Miami Dolphins.
No. He's a great teammate with the Dolphins. Yeah. Glorified possession receiver.
I'm not a Dolphins fan, but I'm watching this. He's making great plays in camp, but he's a camp leader. He shuts down the receiver room at one point before the coach puts a film on, has them turn the lights back on. He gets up, addresses the team, and basically says, you guys that aren't practicing, that aren't hurt, it's not going to fly anymore. Now, there's a lot of expletives here that I had cut out, but he basically says, you guys got to start practicing. you guys not practicing is
why.
Hope
he was a little smoother than the Carlos guy on Last Chance U when he spoke to the team.
It was a little smoother than that. But there has been a lot of people standing up and addressing the Cleveland Browns, a lot of players' meetings so far, addressing their teammates in rooms. What I did notice last night is the camp can be a strain on these guys, as we know early on, and keeping weight on is a problem for some people, and you have one diet that we'd all love to have.
Okay, so Noah Spence was drafted out of Ohio State by your Tampa Bay Bucks last year. When he reported to camp, he was 228 pounds. As a defensive end, he was lighter than O.J. Howard or a wide receiver in Mike Evans.
Wow.
So this year, they said, look, not only are you going to watch film, you're going to go through your reps, but part of what you do at training camp is you're going to learn how to eat. So he's eating 9 to 10 meals a day, and they're making him pack on 9,000 calories a day. I mean, I would absolutely love this. I don't know if I could eat this much.
Me too.
But meal number one, I'll try to quickly go through this. It starts in the morning, 2 protein shakes. Each shake has 2 scoops of vegan protein powder, 2 scoops of peanut butter and a banana, and 2 scoops of sugar-free coconut milk ice cream. 1,400 calories.
Would love it.
Meal two is breakfast, pre-practice. Cream of wheat, almond milk, brown sugar, 3 pieces of French toast, 2 heaping scoops of potatoes.
I'll pass on the cream of wheat.
700 calories.
Sounds awful.
Meal three, post-practice. 2 protein shakes in the locker room, 1,400 calories. Meal four at the facility, 6 ounces of grilled chicken, broccoli, mashed cauliflower, 2 pieces of bread covered in sriracha ranch dressing, 600 calories. Meal 5, 500 grains of pasta, 6 ounces of ground turkey, peppers, onions, and a sauce, 1,300 calories. Meal 6, 2 protein shakes after the team's walkthrough, 1,400 calories. Meal 7,
after a walkthrough,
6-ounce steak, 4 ounces of shrimp, 500 grams of potatoes, zucchini, and squash, 1,000 calories. Meal 8 is a snack, peanut butter and jelly sandwich with a glass of chocolate almond milk. That might sound the best.
Oh.
500 calories. And then meal 9 is 1 shake before bedtime, 700 calories. Grand total, 9,000 calories. He's at 263 from 228. They say body fat is minimal. They said that he looks incredible. He's chiseled up at 263. He's gained nothing but muscle weight.
Oh.
Those protein shakes. No, thank you.
It sounded more fun before you started reading me what. I mean, there was a lot of cream and wheat and muscle shakes in there. If I'm going to eat 9,000 calories, it's going to be a fun 9,000.
Those muscle shakes, though, are tasty, especially when you have banana and
especially
peanut butter in it.
8 of them a day.
Yeah.
He got a lot of potatoes in here, too. He got some French toast.
Yeah, French toast, Brown.
I like French toast. Yeah, cream of wheat, Jim.
Cauliflower?
Here's what I'll do. I don't need the healthy 9,000 calories. Just give me 5,000 unhealthy calories.
One day. It's... Thing is perfect for Kirby Smart in Georgia so far in camp, or he's just being like Nick Saban. Kirby, after practice yesterday, says he sees a little bit of some of his veterans being a little fat and happy after last season's SEC championship.
You call it what it is, but I know as I look out there, there's a couple guys that you would say, okay, this is the guy that maybe played really well last year, and he's not playing to the level that I think he can play to, and that's probably one of the scariest things that could happen to our team. But the good news is, in a lot of those positions, there's a guy just as talented behind him that's scratching and clawing, or maybe just got here.
That's Kirby yesterday after practice. That is a scary thing for a team that has success getting fat and happy. You see it in all sports at all levels.
Tell me this, though. When's the last time we actually saw that in college football?
Ohio State, 2015.
Yeah, but you know,
they won a lot of games, but they were never the machine they were supposed to be.
Even that year, though, you think about it, they kind of came out of nowhere once they got to the postseason to actually win a national championship. I mean, they've still scratched around, and they've been in the conversation each and every year.
Florida State, 2014.
They had a special player.
But 2013, they were national champs. 2014, they were fat and happy.
No, well, they went undefeated.
They were never the same. Jameis was sluggish. They had to come from behind so many second halves. They were never that good. They got boat raced by Oregon in the semis.
That was the year Jameis was suspended for the Clemson game, right?
Yeah.
And the year you mentioned Ohio State, they only had the one regular season loss at Michigan State, but Michigan State ended up in the playoffs because
100%.
They're in the same division.
But remember, it was supposed, Ohio State had all those quarterbacks.
Yeah, they're unstoppable.
Phillip from Huntsville on email kept, you guys are talking like Ohio State could beat, Napoleon at Waterloo, how good they were. And they ended up being very lackadaisical throughout the season.
What would the line have been, Ohio State versus Napoleon's French Army, Lance?
Ooh.
No, it's that Ohio State team.
That Ohio State team that underachieved.
I'd take Ohio State in that one. Your home comfort system, one of the biggest investments you'll make. And with Alabama's heat and humidity, you owe it to yourself to find a cooling system you can rely on day in, day out for years to come. Before you buy your next cooling system, visit Trane.com to learn why it's America's most trusted HVAC system. It's hard to stop a Trane.
7:37 as you wake up this morning. Second and Tua writes in, I think Jarrett Stidham at Auburn is great, first-round talent, but does he have the weapons around him? There is a lot of talk about that receiving core at Auburn growing up and taking the step to the next level. Nate Craig Myers down the stretch had, you know, increased catches as the year progressed last year. As Stidham got better, so did Nate Craig Myers. And then Ryan Davis was uncoverable by Alabama in that game.
Yeah, Ryan Davis is a guy that, I mean, just based on the pace right now, is a guy that could reach close to 100 receptions this year. But I think Nate Craig Myers is the guy you've got to look for. He's the guy that's got to continue to progress. He's got to be that deep threat on this offense, and that's exactly what Jarrett Stidham needs.
I mean, Will Hastings being out affects that, right? Will Hastings had 525 receiving yards, but his average yards per catch was 20 yards. I mean, he was a deep threat, Will Hastings was. He's the guy that, you know, he would sneak into the secondary, he'd somehow be wide open. Stidham would find him for a touchdown. So you've got that kind of explosive guy that you're not going to have for half a season.
Alex writes in on Twitter at Jocks Roundtable, will Stidham have a great season since Gus said he will take the handcuffs off of him this year? They are freeing him up to do more at the line, and that helps that team out tremendously, I think. And Auburn fan Scott points out no way that Jarrett gets towards Cam Newton with his, was it 51 touchdowns is what he says.
It was something insane. It was,
again, no chance.
No chance on Cam. You can read that entire story at Saturday Down South. Now to a different story this morning at 7:39, and that involves Jalen Hurts. Why Jalen Hurts could one day play for who, Lance?
According to John Adams, a guy that you guys know well, he's been writing, what, for decades and decades and decades?
He's been at
the Knoxville News Sentinel.
Nice guy, by the way.
Now, KnoxNews.com has got this article up, and he said one quarterback battle outside of Garantano and Keller Christ right there in Knoxville to keep an eye on is Hurts and Tagovailoa. And he points out that Jalen Hurts, his familiarity, obviously, with Jeremy Pruitt, would put him right there squarely in the mix to become Tennessee's possible next starting quarterback.
So when Jalen finishes the year, gets his degree in December, you know, a lot of people project Florida or places like that. Tennessee's a place to keep an eye on.
Well, and this is something that he does point out. John Adams is like, why would a coach or why would a player of his caliber want to go to a program that went 0-8 in the SEC last year? He points out that Tennessee lost more in a 1-4-game stretch than Hurts has in his entire college career. But he said the familiarity with Jeremy Pruitt. He also points out that this is a offense that he would be really familiar with. He also talks about there's a transfer coming in, the offensive lineman in what's the kid's name that he played with?
Brandon Kennedy.
Yeah, Brandon Kennedy. That's so interesting. So a weirdly interesting storyline, I think, then, for Alabama is, I mean, against Louisville, I think you guys would be shocked if you don't see some Hurts, right?
Shocked.
And wouldn't you be shocked at that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Against Arkansas State, are you shocked if you don't see some Hurts?
Shocked.
I've said, and I'm backing off of this a little bit, that Arkansas State may be a tougher opponent than Louisville, favorites to win the Sun Belt, but I would be shocked if you didn't see both quarterbacks there, too.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. It's your mouth.
Yeah.
But a better way of maybe saying it is, I think Arkansas State's better than you would think a Sun Belt team would be.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, when you see Arkansas State on the schedule, oh, okay, that's an easy one. It's a more difficult team than
you
would think.
Well, you could see there'd be a little bit more of a letdown, too. I mean, you're not going to necessarily get up for that uniform as good as Arkansas State can be. It's
right.
The opener against Louisville. Mm-hmm. You know, Louisville's offense would have to be really good for us not to see Jalen Hurts. And at the same time, Alabama's defense would really have to underachieve.
I mean, if Tua is the starter, if Tagovailoa is the starter, I don't think it's crazy that he would go the distance at Ole Miss. I don't know how you guys think that game would play out.
Yeah, you would think by then, by the SEC opener, you're going to have one quarterback.
I don't think it would be insane to think he would go the distance against Texas A&M. I'm talking about just no mop-up time for anybody, start or play the whole game. But the point I'm getting to is at some point you're going to get to that fourth game that Jalen Hurts has played. And if indeed Tua Tagovailoa is the starter and locks down on that job, to me that becomes kind of a weirdly interesting storyline is once Hurts has played in four games, what happens after that? Because what you're talking about right there, Lance, if he were to go to a place like Tennessee, that's the difference in having 2 years and 1 year.
Maybe Jalen's dad's right. Maybe he will be one of the biggest free agents in college football history because here we are in August, August 8th, and there are columns in other SEC towns talking about Jalen Hurts come transfer to my school.
Well, you think about, we talk about abbreviated sample sizes, and that's what you've got with Tua right now. With Jalen, you've got two full seasons.
Yeah.
And you remember the hype surrounding Jared Stidham, and he lived up to it last year with Auburn. But, I mean, this is a guy that we only saw in four games in the Big 12. So if you've got this type of experience on the stage that Jalen's got.
28 games.
You're another school out there that really needs a quarterback that's got an interesting, unique skill set. I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams knocking.
Notre Dame's to hit it, man.
Counting down until kickoff.
And caught! Touchdown!
The Jocks Roundtable Top 40, presented by Baumhauer's Victory Grill.
Number 12, Notre Dame.
Cheering for your grill.
It's really in a five-year run, 23 losses for Notre Dame. And that was a little higher than I expected. Let's start with the one thing that could impact the season the most. And I'll go the loss of their defensive coordinator. No offense to Clark Lea, who takes over, but losing Elko on the defensive side is a storyline for Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's something that I've brought up for the last, you know, couple of months when we've been talking about Notre Dame in the offseason. I think it's a huge loss. Mike Elko's getting paid a ton of money now at Texas A&M. They actually won the bidding war for him, and he decided not to hang around. Nine returning starters on the defense. You've got the personnel.
Yeah, you got some stars like Tillery and Tavon Coney there, some really big-time stars right in the meat of that defense.
Yeah, Coney might be your best, probably your best middle linebacker since, what is that?
Manti Te'o.
Manti Te'o in 2012, when that defense, by the way, only gave up less than 13 points per game. So the defense, personnel-wise, has got a ton of potential. But again, when you lose Elko, and then offensively, when you lose two All-Americans on the offensive line, you lose Josh Adams, almost a 1,500-yard guy out of the backfield, and you've still got question marks at the quarterback position.
Why does nobody believe in Wimbush?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
because you just heard Lance say it.
Athletic guy, but completed less than 50% of his passes. That's hard to do in today's college game.
You mentioned Elko in that defense, Dunaway. Twice last year, only twice, did they give up more than 20 points in a game. Guess what happened in both those games?
Oh, they lost.
Once they got bombed by Miami, and that was a weird outcome.
That was, a lot of people forget, they got up to number three.
I know. I was about to say that was a team that only had a 1-point loss to Georgia at the time. That was it. And they lose 41-8 at Miami. That game got away from them early, and they were spinning the whole time. The only other time they gave up more than 20 points was the loss at Stanford, 38-20. Even in the Georgia loss, Georgia only scored 20 points in that game. They just didn't get enough help from their offense. So that was a really good defense last year that gave up 21 points per game. I do think that's the biggest question. I got confidence that Brian Kelly will get offense going. I just wonder how good they're going to be defensively.
Well, the schedule's brutal. Six losable games. You know, if everything broke the right way, I guess you could go 11-1 with this team. Worst case, it's kind of a 7-5. I think they're a 9-3 team this year. Again, they're tough to figure out.
Can you get up Jalen Hurts' numbers here?
What, do you want his passing numbers from last year?
Yeah, give me his passing numbers, because running the football, Wimbush had 103 yards last year.
Right.
So he was a really successful running quarterback.
No, 803 yards.
That's what I said, 803 yards. 803 yards of running the football. So he was really good running the football, a dual threat guy. He struggled, as LT said, passing. And you hear people say Jalen Hurts, not a good passer. Was he a better passer than Wimbush is? Wimbush at 49% completion.
Yeah.
16 touchdowns, 6 interceptions.
Yes, he's better than all those things.
136, 275 attempts. How many attempts did Jalen have?
Jalen Hurts had 254 attempts.
So just a few less than Wimbush. So basically, Brandon Wimbush is Jalen Hurts for Notre Dame.
A little bit without the supporting cast. If I asked you guys the best rushing quarterback in college football, who would you say?
Nick Fitzgerald.
I mean, I think you could make that argument. I think a lot of people would say Khalil Tate.
Yeah, maybe so.
I would actually say Jalen Hurts. I thought he was a very effective runner when he ran the football.
Well, he was, but now you got to remember Fitzgerald last year finished eighth in the conference in rushing and didn't even play the full season.
Well, the reason I bring up Khalil Tate is he had 12 rushing touchdowns. Brandon Wimbush, 14. Nick Fitzgerald, guess how many rushing touchdowns?
14, I'm looking at it.
14, yeah. 8 for Jalen Hurts. So Wimbush, it shows you the damage he could do with his legs.
You talk about that schedule. It is challenging, but we previewed the Pac-12 earlier, and I have Notre Dame winning both of those big Pac-12 games with Stanford and USC.
I've got them losing both, and then I've got them losing to Michigan. I think those are the three losses.
So a three-loss team for you. I expect more out of Notre Dame than that this year. I say 10-2 or better.
I think they're probably a 10-2 team. I do think Lance said this earlier with Luganbill. This is a hard team to get a grasp on, and I agree with Lance on that. It is a hard team to pin down on how I really feel about Notre Dame. If I had to put money, chips on the table right now, I think I'd take Notre Dame at 10-2, which doesn't have them in the playoffs, has them in a New Year's Six Bowl, and that's kind of life as a Notre Dame coach. You don't even get to win a conference championship at 10-2.
But they do have a kicker in Justin Yoon that would could kick for your life inside of 40.
That's somebody you'd want out
he's,
there
he's
for
pretty
you.
Good.
I'll ask you this right off the bat. Michigan-Notre Dame, that first game, gut feeling on that one. Forget the point spreads, but virtual pick them anyway.
Yeah, Michigan's slight favorite now. I think 2-point favorite.
I would lean Notre Dame.
I do too.
Lean, slightly.
I lean will be there. Michigan, who is that game more important for?
Well, Notre Dame.
I don't know.
I mean, Michigan.
I mean, Jim Harbaugh in year four to lose that game.
But here's why I say that, though, and Jim makes this point all the time. Michigan loses that game, every single thing is still in front of them. And that's true of Notre Dame as well. But, you know, Michigan can still win the Big Ten. Even if they don't go to the playoffs, Lance, if they win the Big Ten, that changes the whole narrative for Jim Harbaugh. Notre Dame loses that game, they are on thin ice the whole year with a heck of a schedule still left in front of them.
Steven on Twitter, Northwestern will beat Notre Dame this year and tear down the goalposts. Northwestern, not a bad team. Jacob says, I think if you switch Hurts and Wimbush last year, the records are still the same at both places.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, a lot of people forget Notre Dame was a 10-win team that got up as high as number 3 when they lost that game to Miami.
Saturday down south, projecting like a lot of people are that Jarrett Stidham is going to have a special year as quarterback at Auburn. And they asked the question, since 2000, how high can Stidham rise on the Auburn pecking order of greatest quarterbacks since 2000 at Auburn? Here are some of the great ones, and you tell me what kind of year it will take for Jarrett Stidham to pass some of these guys. The often forgotten Brandon Cox, who had great success in the Iron Bowl and a lot of wins. Nick Marshall, who won an SEC championship and led a team, at least offensively, did all he could to win a national championship for Auburn in 2013. Jason Campbell, who won all of his games in 2004 and didn't get a chance to play USC. And then Cam Newton, who did win all of his games and a national championship in 2010. What does Jarrett Stidham have to do to fall in line with those guys this year?
Well, he's never going to touch Cam Newton. I mean, again, that was the greatest single season we've seen in college football history. If he gets somewhere between Nick Marshall and Jason Campbell, Auburn's going to have a chance to win a championship.
But let me give you, because when you ask this, I start saying, okay.
By the way, those were guys that won championships.
What is the best season for those two quarterbacks? And you tell me if these are Jarrett Stidham's numbers, are you underwhelmed? Okay.
2013 and 2004 for Campbell and Marshall.
2004, okay. I know we're going to be really underwhelming.
Well, I was pulling up Brandon Cox, too, because let me just say real quick, his best season numbers-wise was 2005. When he threw for 2,324 yards, 15 touchdowns, 8 picks.
Jason Campbell.
No, that's Brandon Cox. Okay. Brandon Cox.
The numbers are going to be much better than
Jason
that.
Campbell's best year, 2004, a 69% completion percentage.
Right.
Terrific.
Really good.
But 2,700 yards, 20 touchdowns, 7 picks.
You don't have to throw the ball as much when you have two top 5 picks behind you.
They were awful good, weren't they? You tell me, though. I mean, that's underwhelming, though, right?
Give me Nick Marshall, though, in 2013, because he ran the football a lot with Trey Mason.
Right. Well, that's going to be the difference with him. Passing yardage, his best year was 2014, 2,532 yards, 20 touchdowns. Rushing, though, in 2013, 1,068 yards. He had more total yards in 2014, but more rushing yards in 2013.
Yeah, again, to me, if he gets close to the in-between of Jason Campbell and Nick Marshall.
But those passing numbers, he's got to do better than those. Wouldn't you agree with that? And then all those I gave you, Brandon Cox, Jason Campbell, Nick Marshall's best passing numbers, Jarrett Stidham for Auburn to be what they want to be, he's got to be better than all those.
Your point being, though, LT, is the top three guys on this list have major championships, the SEC or an SEC and national championship.
How would you guys rate? I mean, obviously Cam Newton's one. Would you go Nick Marshall or Jason Campbell, too? I think I would go Nick Marshall, too.
They were just such different quarterbacks.
They were.
I would probably go Jason Campbell, too. But again, like Cam, it's a 1 year. I mean, he was good. He was consistently good. But the 2003 team, to me, underperformed compared to, 2004. They got it together and won them all. 2003 should have been better. Nick Marshall was really good, though.
Well, if I give you Stidham's numbers last year in 14 games, 3,158 pass yards, what do you project his numbers in a similar amount of games this year to be? What would you think?
Sort of right where I project Tua's to be. I think it gets to the 3,500 neighborhood, 3,600.
Jarrett Stidham only had 18 touchdown passes last year.
And remember, we've had multiple people on this show that are projecting Auburn for the first time under Gus Malzahn not to have a 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, I will too. But if that is the case, then that's going to be more yards, obviously, for Jarrett Stidham.
What does Jarrett Stidham have to do to approach Cam Newton? Give me the best out-of-conference win this year for the Pac-12. I know you have that happening in a couple of places in our predictions earlier. Who's the best out-of-conference win for you in the Pac-12?
I'm going to say it starts September 1. I think Washington rolls into Atlanta, and I think they knock off Auburn, and I think that's a huge win because, obviously, Auburn, a national championship contender, and I think it would be a big notch on the belt for the Pac-12.
I've got USC beating Notre Dame in the rivalry game. That's at the end of the year, so it's gonna depend on Notre Dame being really good for that to be that big. Earlier, I've also got USC beating Texas. I put a lot of stock into USC. I've got them beating Texas and Notre Dame. I think that Texas win, because of where it falls in the year, might actually be viewed as the bigger out-of-conference win.
Yeah, I don't have them with any big out-of-conference win. Zero.
You got Stanford losing to Notre Dame as well?
I got Stanford losing to Notre Dame.
Notre Dame sweeping the Pac-12.
I do. I got Notre Dame sweeping the Pac-12. I got UCLA losing to Fresno State, a Mountain West contender there.
And so, certainly at Oklahoma, you got UCLA losing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I got no big out-of-conference wins for the Pac-12.
Colorado at Nebraska. You know, Nebraska winning that one?
Nope. Wow. I got Nebraska winning that one. So none, zero for me. Mark that down. Let's do second down.
Second down.
Or Oregon State at Ohio State. You don't like the Beavers there?
I don't like the Beavers in that first
game. Would be a shocker.
Yeah, boy.
You asked this to Luganville. Top three quarterbacks in the Pac-12 versus the top three quarterbacks in the SEC. Which conference do you take?
I think I'm going to lean Pac-12, and I understand what he's saying about Jake Browning. And again, Brown kind of brought this up with storylines heading into camp. There needs to be receivers that emerge for Chris Peterson's offense and Jake Browning. But I think I would take Jake Browning. Khalil Tate, such a dynamic player out of Arizona, and then Justin Herbert, maybe the highest ceiling of any of these quarterbacks out there. Which three quarterbacks do we even go in the SEC? I mean, there's a ton of really good quarterbacks.
And that's the thing, is it's so much easier to define the top three in the Pac-12. I think it's really easy to define the top three in the Pac-12. It's near impossible to do it in the SEC.
I would go Stidham, Tua, and Fromm.
Oh, you'd leave Locke out.
I'd leave Locke and Nick Fitzgerald out. I like both of those guys. Bentley at South Carolina. A lot of talented guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's near impossible to do the top three in the SEC, and which it's three, easily defined.
Which three would you go
with? Because of that, I would go the SEC, because I think it's easier. I mean, I've got seven guys.
Yeah, see, I think I would go, when you're thinking about it, Brown, I think I would go Fromm, Stidham, and I think I would go Locke, because I haven't seen enough of Tagovailoa, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of him to say 100% he's top three.
I haven't seen Locke be great against good defenses, though. See, I picture this being like an SEC All-Star game against a Pac-12 All-Star game.
Right.
So I'm going to be playing a pretty good defense. I haven't seen Locke light up an elite defense yet.
Well, and we haven't seen a full season of Khalil Tate at Arizona to go to the other side there. I don't know what, Lance, that guy's going to do. I saw him in pretty much half a season last year, and he was dynamite.
Man, he is. Yeah, he is so much fun to watch.
And we haven't seen a full game of Tua Tagovailoa
yet. That's right.
Third down.
The hardest to predict team in the Southeastern Conference this year. Hardest to predict team in the Southeastern Conference this year.
To me, it's South Carolina. Again, I think South Carolina can be a 10-2 team, But then on the other side, I could see South Carolina bottom fall out, and they're 6-6.
I think it's Mississippi State, because I think Mississippi State is talented enough to win every single game, and I would include Alabama, every single game on their schedule. They're talented enough to do it. Now, the problem with Alabama is they don't play them well in Bryant-Denny, and that's where that game happens to be. They've had their struggles against Auburn of late. I could see them losing at Kansas State. I could see them losing to Florida. I could see them losing at LSU. I could see them also winning all those games.
Yeah, I might pull back now. I might say Florida, actually, Dunaway.
To me, it's Ole Miss. Because for Ole Miss, I could see them beating Texas Tech or losing to Texas Tech and then playing Alabama tough.
They're going to beat a couple of teams they shouldn't.
Losing to Arkansas and upsetting Auburn or scaring Auburn. I mean, scaring good enough to scare the elites, maybe even upset one of them, but then lose to a Louisiana Monroe. That's the kind of season Ole Miss. That's what I saw one guy from SB Nation say. How can you project what this Ole Miss team is going to do? I could see them losing to Louisiana Monroe and upsetting Auburn.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that this is, and I could go back on this, Brown, in the next couple of weeks, but I'm starting to think Ole Miss against Texas Tech might be easy money.
And oh, you're taking Ole Miss?
Ole Miss, yeah.
Yeah.
You're taking Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think Texas Tech's going to take a step back, and that secondary will get ravaged by those wide receivers.
Fourth down.
And finally, Notre Dame, our preview team today in our Baumhauer's Victory Grill preview. And I always like to ask the questions when I get four downs on those days. The most famous non-sports alum to come from that institution at Notre Dame, I was surprised of the people I didn't know.
You knew number one there, right?
Yeah, I knew these guys, yeah. But usually there's a bunch of people. Oh, they went to – I was expecting more from Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think Regis has to be the number one. I think everybody would say Regis Philbin is number one.
I mean, Regis, Condoleezza Rice, Hannah Storm.
Where did Condi not go to school?
Really?
She gets counted a lot of places.
I thought she was Stanford.
Well, I know.
She probably could chip off one of those credits for you at Jack State.
I mean, already on this ranker vote that just takes vote from Americans, Phil Donahue is four.
How is he behind Hannah Storm?
Yeah, I'd go Phil Donahue in front of Hannah Storm.
Jim Caviezel, he played Jesus.
He played Jesus, yeah.
Yeah. JC played JC.
Nicholas Sparks, he writes some of your best literature, don't
I know. The Notebook. He writes The Notebook. But didn't you expect a better list from Notre Dame than those
folks?
Yeah,
it's a touch underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, because how uppity they are about their academics.
I'm a little surprised there's not a major politician that's in, well, other than Condoleezza Rice that's in there.
Other than?
Well, I mean, she was, you know, kind of, I'm talking about somebody that ran for offices.
I mean, just real quick on Ohio State famous alumni. All of a sudden, you got George Steinbrenner, I guess that's sports. Dwight Yoakam, well, I guess.
Dwight Yoakam went to Ohio
State. Dahmer's number five.
Well, he's memorable.
He got a degree.
He made a mark.
Dwight Yoakam went to Ohio State's a surprise to me. I would have had him in a Southwest Conference.
They've got Jeffrey Dahmer over Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah, that's impossible.
Again, it's at ranker.com.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.